Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this week's episode of Talk Exchange. Today we have with us Michael Reddington, who is a communication expert. And I'm not going to spoil it for you here in the intro, but you need to hear this guy's background. It's very, very interesting. He's been at lots of National Exchange Club conventions, and he even wrote a book called The Disciplined Listening Method. So this is a really neat conversation if you have any desire at all to improve your communication. One of my favorite things that he says is how time is the enemy of empathy and how you really need to take responsibility for how you're feeling. It's just a neat episode, and I really think that you're going to get a lot out of this one. And so we hope you enjoy this week's episode of Talk Exchange with Michael Reddington. See you next week.
Welcome to this episode of Talk Exchange. I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the National Exchange Club.
And I'm Christy Lindahl, Director of Communications.
Christy, it's been such an enlightening day, as it is every day. And if you are a new listener to this podcast, I hope you've been keeping up with our sessions, because every one of them are designed to give you a tidbit of knowledge and more, right?
More, yes. A well-rounded individual.
Definitely.
What we want to come out of exchange.
Absolutely. And if you're new to our podcast and stumbled upon it, please go to nationalexchangeclub.org to learn more. And to our members, again, as in every episode, our goal is to provide you with some great learning to enhance your life and that you can apply to exchange or outside of exchange.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, we're pleased today to have a friend and partner of Exchange. We have had Michael Reddington at our conventions. He's trained our leaders and different demographics of our groups in his disciplined learning method, which is just a great way to get to know people. You know, Exchange Club members, like many people, they're interested in meeting people and getting to know people, but also in helping their fellow members and helping their clubs if they're a leader, right?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So it's pretty awesome. So we're pleased to welcome today Michael Reddington, CFI, president of Inquasive. And again, his topic, one of the many things that he's experienced and an expert in, is the disciplined learning method. So welcome, Michael, and catch us up on what you're doing today.
It's great to see you again. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. What I'm doing today is what I do most days, a combination of teaching and writing and publishing. So very happy to be able to spend the time to have the conversation with you today.
Well, thank you. And the last we were together, I know you had a new book, and I'm sure you have training developed around that book and are just continuing to expand the subject, right?
Yes, ma'am. So the book is The Disciplined Listening Method, How a Certified Forensic Interviewer Uncovers Hidden Value in Every Conversation. And yes, the book is chock full of research and experience and stories and examples, really on how to connect with people in a way where, and you used the term leaders before, whether that's business leaders, community leaders, family leaders, beyond, how we can engage with people so we are gathering more intelligence, building stronger relationships, and encouraging them to share oftentimes what they believe to be sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences.
That's a lot.
It is. But, you know, that makes me think, too, one of the most fascinating stories I think you tell is, so take us back to a moment in time when you were working in your career and you had that light bulb moment where you said, you know, this information is something that every person could benefit from, that the average person could put to work in their own life to develop these deeper relationships, as you mentioned.
Well, I appreciate you asking. That's a great question. And early on in my interrogation career, I began applying a lot of the techniques I was learning across the board in my life and didn't really think much of it. It was just how I was being taught to communicate and observe. And so naturally that would bleed over into other aspects. And I was successful in a lot of conversations outside of my professional realm, if you will, and people would make comments about it, but I didn't really think anything of it. And then as I was training investigators, particularly in the private sector, it got to the point where fairly frequently their CEOs or vice president of operations or whoever would poke their head into the training and then invite me out to lunch or dinner and start asking me questions about critical conversations that they needed to have. And it dawned on me that I was solving for the exact same communication problems in my investigative interviews that they were trying to solve for in their everyday business conversations. So that led me to refocus my inner nerd from interview and investigations to business communication. And during that research is when I just stumbled upon two realizations. The best leaders and the best interrogators capitalize on the same two core skills, vision and influence. And the cognitive process that interrogation suspects experience when they truthfully commit to saying, "I did it," is essentially identical to the cognitive processes customers experience when they commit to saying, "I'll buy it," and employees experience when they commit to saying, "I'll do it." So with those realizations in mind, I said, okay, you know, this interview and interrogation stuff has been fun. I'm still proud to serve on the board for the International Association of Interviewers, but that's really when I pivoted more towards the executive education and really working with business professionals and leaders and community leaders to help them apply these same skills, perspectives, and techniques to their high value interactions as well.
Yeah, Michael, that is such a reasonable leap, you know, and that's kind of what we talk to our club members about.
Yes.
You're not just an exchange club member. You're not just an employee. You're not just a parent or a grandparent. You're a full person. And all of these experiences help shape you.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I'm just thinking too. So that does make perfect sense. So give us an example of how you transitioned and can help, you know, interrogation is a big word. So to think that, and I know that there's a fine line because I've been a Dale Carnegie instructor and I know, you know, people point out to me that sometimes I ask a lot of questions because that too was the way I was trained and taught and then did my training. So, you know, there's a fine line between wanting people to feel like you're interested and curious versus you're interrogating them, right? So how did you, sure, as an interviewer in the interrogation business, kind of put your soft skills to work to make it feel like you're a genuinely interested person?
Good question.
Great question. And thankfully, there's another reasonable leap there. Believe it or not, it's the softer skills that often pay the big dividends in the investigative interviews, mm-hmm, especially if you're interviewing people who are repeat offenders or come from tougher backgrounds or, you know, pick your descriptor. A lot of people who are used to operating in that type of environment, they've made regrettable decisions more than once, and, sure, and they've had conversations about these decisions more than once. They're used to being attacked. Mm-hmm. So that's where their defenses are ready. It gives them home field advantage. So by using strategic approaches that encourage people to save face, maintain their respect, and at different parts of the conversation actually put them in control, that's typically new ground for them. They don't have a game plan for that. So while it is authentic human communication, it also strategically is quite productive in those environments. So now when you look at carrying that approach over to conversations outside of the investigative realm, there's not that much adaptation to do from that perspective. Really, rule number one is help people save face. If we can help people save face, we will be astonished with what they will tell us and what they will do with us. The second one is embrace the universality of the human experience. So no matter who we are, no matter where we're from, there are things that we have in common. There's human experiences that we all have and we all share. And if we can understand that and develop the somewhere between self-confidence and self-awareness necessary to suspend judgment, mm-hmm, just put it in our back pocket. Judgment doesn't matter for the duration of this conversation. And connect with people in a way that they didn't anticipate. The value we can begin to cultivate from those conversations is nearly unlimited, you know, depending on who we're talking to and what we're talking about. So really, if we just focus on helping people save face, connecting at that universal human level and building from there, it's astonishing what people will tell us and what they'll do for us.
Oh, so you disarm, mm-hmm, them almost, you
right,
know, of those,
yes,
defenses.
Very much.
Yes, okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not difficult, but it's still amazing. As you were talking, I was thinking, it's not difficult, but it's also not easy for somebody to whom that doesn't come naturally, because it's amazing to me, being very observant in that category, how many people don't operate those skills that so many of us feel are basic or natural? Because leaders, really everybody in any relationship, you need some sort of soft skill approach, right? But yet we meet so many people who don't have that. And I think self-awareness is the key. Have you noticed that? That really people who have very little self-awareness are typically not great with their soft skills. They're not great with listening. They're just not great with a lot of those things, which makes relationships and membership in any organization really difficult, right?
Yeah, those people who listen mm-hmm. to respond.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, exactly. Where's a good place to start for somebody like that, Michael?
For my observation, perception has been number one, to agree, of course, but then to go back to a couple of things. Number one, most of us, like 95, 6, 7, 8, 9% of us, were not taught to communicate this way.
True.
Mm-hmm. We were taught by whoever raised us, our parents, our grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever, school teachers, coaches, depending on how much fun somebody had growing up, maybe the occasional police officer. These are the people who taught us how to communicate. Yes. And they generally taught us to communicate by talking down to us, to oversimplify it. So now, as we grow in our lives, we just replicate what we've seen and what we've taught. It'll be different for individuals, but that theme holds fairly consistent. I was extreme. My former teammates, it's not just me. We were extremely lucky to nearly all of our conversations were with people who absolutely did not want to talk with us. And it's not just the suspects, the people you would assume, but the victims, the witnesses, the people who've been involved. Like, none of them want to have these conversations. So learning what it takes to connect with somebody and build a real bond with them in a very short period of time, who wants nothing to do with you. Now, if you apply those same perspectives to our average everyday conversation, the windfall can be substantial. To the second part of the answer to that question is, I truly believe, yes, we can call it self-awareness, we can call it situational awareness, we can call it emotional intelligence, pick a label, throw it on, it probably fits. But really, it is the ability to prioritize an outcome over an individual emotion or need. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if I'm interviewing somebody that did something terrible to another human being, it is very natural for my emotions to take over and my value system to kick in and my moral judgment to be at high alert and to feel like this person needs to feel like they're the scum of the earth because of what they did to this person. And I need to make sure that while I get this confession from them, they understand that they have ruined their chance to be a decent human being on planet Earth. All of that is counterproductive.
Right.
All of it. Now, I don't need to help over-rationalize their behavior, and I don't need to justify what they did or make them feel good about what they did, but I at least need to remain neutral mm-hmm. because it's quite likely that nobody has ever done that in communicating with them before. So if I'm having a conversation with somebody who did something terrible to another human being, my job is to get the truth in as much detail as possible. So that way, when the adjudicator gets involved, whoever that is, a judge in the civilian world, an HR person in the business world, an arbitrator at the exchange, maybe there's a panel that makes difficult decisions, whoever the adjudicators are, that when they get involved, they look at the depth of the truth that I can provide them and say, oh, wow, based on this, here is the correct decision. So I can prioritize the outcome over my need to have my ego, my pride, my values, my morals, my emotions satisfied in the moment. And honestly, it's true with my family. I am blessed in a billion ways, my wife and son most especially. And there's times like with all families where things get upsetting. But what's the outcome I care about the most? The health and safety of my wife and son and our relationship together. So in this moment, and I'm certainly not perfect, but in this moment, if I'm trying to satisfy my emotional need first, I probably just made a tense situation 1,000 times worse. But if I can stop and think, wait a minute, the most important thing is that my son grows up to be a safe and healthy and happy and intelligent, valuable, contributing member of the human race. Well, then, okay, how do I handle this conversation now in order to create that? And it's truly the people who are most successful are the ones that can suspend judgment, can compartmentalize their emotions, can prioritize that outcome, and can communicate and interact in a way that gives people the best opportunity to achieve it.
Absolutely. Your perspective is very important. As you mentioned, you could, you know, I've heard that saying a lot, choose your reaction or choose your response. And that fits right into that too, because so many people, things can trigger a certain response and then that becomes a regretful situation, right? I'm sure a lot of people that you've interviewed in your career have some level of regret because they made an emotional snap decision and then later thought, wow, if I had just sat back and thought this through a little bit, things would be different, as you mentioned that you do in your relationships. Interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, everything you're saying, Michael, just seems like it should be such common sense.
Right.
But like you mentioned, human nature, just, you know, our emotions take over. We're not getting those desired outcomes because we lose sight of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And because we don't like feeling uncomfortable. Yes. Mm-hmm. We don't like feeling emotionally unpleasant. I know that's a big spectrum, right? We don't like feeling emotionally unpleasant. So we often also don't like taking responsibility for how we're feeling.
Oh.
So it's easier for me to pin how I feel on an external trigger, something you said, something you did, something I saw. When to your point, Tracy, really, my emotion is generated based on how I translated my observation and gave it meaning based on my experience and my expectations. But why would I take responsibility for that? That would put me in a bad light.
Right.
I can't do that. So now I'm going to blame it on somebody or something else, and then I'll attack that because I can feel better about attacking that. And so it's, when we talk about it in like a neutral, stress-free environment, yeah, it sounds common sense, but factor in that most of us weren't taught to think and operate that way. And then when we need to, it's almost exclusively under stressful situations where our brains are operating at a fraction of their capacity anyway, then it becomes more difficult.
And you know, a lot of people translate big emotions as anger. That's how it presents itself. So, I might lash out at someone, but that doesn't mean I'm angry. I might be hurt or feel like I was taken advantage of. So yeah, it's good to take that personal inventory.
It definitely is. I'm just thinking too, we always look for a takeaway. So if somebody is listening to this episode and fascinated by what you have to say, but most importantly, they have a little dose of humility and they're thinking, on my drive home, I'm thinking, I want to be a little bit better at my relationships. I understand that maybe I need this course or this information. What do you recommend they go home or go to work and do? What slight change could be made to really make a huge difference in their behavior and also in their relationship?
I appreciate you asking. I'll give a couple real quick that tie together. We already talked about one, help people save face.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you want them to change anything, they better have the opportunity to save face to do it. Number two, remember that context is king, context is queen. So you talk about you lash out and I assume that you're angry, but really you're hurt. Mm-hmm. Well, I could be jumping to that conclusion based on my own assumptions and experience, or also because I'm completely ignoring all of the other contextual factors in the moment, and I'm focusing only on the words that you just said. And if I thought about the context of everything else that was going on right now, I would realize that you're not angry, that you're hurt. And that was a defensive response, not an aggressive response, which in turn completely changes how I need to productively respond. So if we can focus on helping people save face, if we can remember the power of context, and then if we can slow down.
Slow down.
I truly
You're right about that, because as you're saying that, I was thinking sometimes it starts with just taking a deep breath, taking a moment, putting all of that into perspective. That's great advice.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, one moment of patience in a moment of anger can save a moment of, or 1,000 moments of hurt feelings.
Oh, no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. That is great. Absolutely. Well, those are great takeaways. I could listen to this all day. It's one of my favorite subjects because I'm such a believer in listening and relationships and conversation, all of this, and really just helping people, of course, our members who we do a lot of, produce a lot of training material for, and helping them have better relationships, because so many of them do come to us with, you know, even in great situations and good clubs and good relationships, people go into situations where they may have a conflict type situation where they need to help somebody else. And so we're called on a lot to give advice on those situations, and you've given us some great advice to work with. So we appreciate that. And I love the takeaway for a person who can listen to this and do something immediately, right?
For sure. For sure. Time is the enemy of empathy. Definitely. If you really want to understand where somebody else is, you got
to
slow down.
That's good. So if somebody wanted to reach Michael Reddington to learn more about this subject or to buy your book, what should they do, Michael?
I appreciate you asking. Thank you. There's a few places they can go. If you're on social media, the only social media platform I'm really on is LinkedIn. So you can find me there at Michael Reddington, CFI. My company's website is inquasive.com, I-N-Q-U-A-S-I-V-E. And that's where people can learn more about the programs that we facilitate for our clients. My personal website is michaelreddington.com. And that's where you can find all of the content that I have online, written interviews, videos, all that stuff is there. And then for the book, it's called The Disciplined Listening Method. It's available on Amazon. It's available on Barnes & Noble. And you can learn more about the book and read some sample chapters at disciplinelistening.com if you'd like to check it out before you commit.
How do you have all the time, Michael?
It is fascinating. And I so appreciate people like you who've learned something great in their career that you say, you know, I can continue to really help people with this information. So we really appreciate what you do. Thanks for being a great partner of Exchange. I know you really have an interest in helping people and helping clubs just for the reasons that you mentioned. So thank you for the work you do, Michael.
Thank you so much. And thank you to all your members. You know, you're an organization built of volunteers who have their own lives and are adding the extra time to make their communities. And I know a lot of programs you do with children and beyond, but to make their communities better places. And so thank you to everyone for their volunteer commitment to their communities and the people who need the support.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, to our audience, thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Exchange.